Hey, Katie.
Oh, hey, Teresa Marie.
How you doing on this fine day?
You know, it's a Friday, the sun's out, the birds are chirping.
And it's my last day of work before vacation, so I'm feeling great.
I'm so glad for you.
I am really happy for myself. Mm-hmm. And
you should be.
I'm currently, okay, so I'm obviously bringing my Kindle.
As you said.
Because I want to read Wild Side. Yes, Wild Side. And I have a bunch of stuff downloaded. But I also am debating bringing like a physical book. And I've had this book put it in my room. Give me 1 second because I don't want to butcher the name. I think it's If We Were Villains by M.L. Rio.
Okay, I've heard of this.
It's like a dark academia. They're in like a Shakespeare club or something, or a group. And somebody's dead. I think that's how it starts. Yeah, okay. Oliver Marx has just served 10 years in jail for a murder he may or may not have committed. On the day he's released, he's greeted by the man who put him in prison. Detective Colburn is retiring. But before he does, he wants to know what really happened a decade ago. As one of 7 young actors studying Shakespeare at an elite arts college, Oliver and his friends play the same roles on stage and off. Hero, villain, tyrant, temptress, ingenue, extra. But when the casting changes and the secondary characters usurp the stars, the play spills dangerously over into life and one of them is found dead.
Okay.
So I've been wanting to read this, but like sometimes like books like this scare me because I'm like, if it's a little like too smart, then like sometimes I don't always get it.
It misses the mark.
Yeah, but I figure if I bring it and I just like read like a little bit here and there, take a break for Wild Side, you know, kind of, because it's not told in chapters. I think it's told in parts or like scenes. Okay. I don't know. So TBD if I end up reading that. But I am definitely going to be reading Wild Side next week. And then I downloaded a bunch of like random books that I've wanted to read for a while, but like haven't. And I've been on a fantasy kick. So we'll see if I continue on with that.
Wow.
And then really quickly, we've been following Kelsey Sheridan Gonzalez for like years on TikTok. Yeah. And she's always been talking about this book that she was writing. She was trying to find a publisher for it like for years. And I think Penguin, Alcove Press, which I think is part of Penguin, picked it up. And I started the arc and I'm a little bit over halfway through. And it's cool. Like it's third person, but it's like kind of, but it's dual POV. And this girl like comes, she basically like comes out of a cave and has like no memory of who she is, where she came from. But everyone's telling her like, you're Emma. And she's basically like this like New York, like socialite. And it's Gilded Age New York time frame. So like the late 1800s. She's on like the Marriage Mart. It's very like historical romance, but there's like fantasy aspects to it.
Okay.
So it's intriguing. So TBD on that.
I'm here for it. So you sparked my interest to go back on NetGalley because I was obsessed with Draco Malfoy, The Mortifying Ordeal of Falling in Love. She's publishing a book. I did ask, request it. I have not received word back yet, but I was like, wait a minute. I have tons of witchy-ish reads that are coming out in the summer.
Of course.
On NetGalley. So I got 2 and I'm very excited. And I did get a third by it's not witchy at all. It's Ivy Fairbanks. She wrote Morbidly Yours, which I absolutely love. I started the book 2. We'll talk about this briefly and then I'm going to hop back to another book that I was going to start talking about. I loved Morbidly Yours. I think it was done so well. So her second book, Heartstrings, it's a second chance romance.
Okay.
Now, they were dating for 6 months prior to splitting. The split was very like, hey, I'm going to follow this career path for my music. The female main character was like, you cool, bye, because I'm going to stay here and work on my residency for medical school. That's all you know. There's no flashbacks. There's no. So I kind of anticipated going into this with like, they're going to meet up at a wedding for the characters of Morbidly Yours.
Okay.
Both best man and maid of honor.
Okay.
I was expecting like the pull of gosh, I still have feelings for you, but you pissed me the hell off because you didn't fight for me.
Yeah.
Or like from the opposite end with him, like you didn't even try, you didn't even like consider it. And like very briefly is it mentioned, but they just fall right back into like, it's like an insta-love.
Okay.
Feeling. If you ask me if I think this is real by any means, I'd be like, nah. Like, I don't buy it. I'm like having a really hard time. I feel like, and she writes really well, but like, I don't believe their love story. I'm about 50% in, and now they're going to do like a friends to benefit, like a friends with benefits kind of a thing.
Yeah.
They both have to go their separate ways after the wedding weekend. So we're talking about like 24 to 48 hours together.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Like, I'm not buying it. And she's someone who tries to like fix everything.
That's like very frustrating.
It is. And like, she's got a really rough relationship with her mom. She's a cancer survivor. So her mom's very like hovering. Her mom and dad split after she was in remission.
Due to
him always being on the road and traveling and trying to make money and provide. And he didn't really know how to handle his daughter being sick or be present. And like, she tries to fix it. And like, again, like there's, I could see how that could come into play with like, all right, you do your dreams. Like, she's got the recipe for a good story. It's just missing for me.
Yeah.
So I happened to see Mallory Marlowe. I like need to meet her in person. I feel like we'd be best friends. She is into like conspiracies and cryptids. And like, when I say conspiracies, I don't mean like who killed JFK. Like, I'm talking
like Bigfoot.
Yeah, like Bigfoot, like shit like that. Like, let's have some fun with this.
The good kind of conspiracies.
The good kind of conspiracies. So she wrote Love and Other Conspiracies, and I loved that as her first book. She was picked up by Berkeley. She really delivered. And you know what I love about finding newer authors? Like, I mean, same with, like, just our tried and true authors, too. Like, watching them progress as they keep writing books.
Mm-hmm.
So Love at First Sighting. I am 40% in. I got this last night. I am 40% in, which like
okay. That's big for you.
Needy about 5 to 7 business days to finish any kind of book at this point. Like,
yeah,
it is so cute and good. Think of him as Men in Black, but the acronym is PISS.
Perfect.
It's like a dying branch of the government, but like he's bound and determined to try, but he kind of like keeps missing the mark and not doing that great. But no one's ever given him another chance to try. Plus, like with the internet now, like everyone's recording these UFO sightings. So like there really isn't a need for like a quote unquote Men in Black anymore.
Okay.
So this like super insta famous girl films like a live of like something chasing her in the woods, like basically a UFO.
Yeah.
Feels like she's like, I'm just basically video myself running away because if I die, someone needs to figure out where I am. Like,
yeah,
her mom basically uses her for her money. She has no like true friends. She's kind of by herself. No one really knows the real her. And her fans are basically like, we're going to cancel you because you're psychotic. Like you must be having some kind of break because God forbid anyone like tries to be true on the internet. Everyone. Yeah. So this guy comes across it and he's like, this is what I saw with my dad 24 hours prior to my dad dying. It's like, so now I need to figure this out. So like he goes to his uncle who's head of this branch. His uncle's like, you know what happened last time you tried to investigate? He's like, let me just like reprove myself. So right now I'm at the point where like he's trying to help her.
Yeah.
And she's like, I'm not fucking talking to you, you psycho. Like you're dressed in suspenders, a weird fucking hat. You're chasing me like the rest of the paparazzi are. You're telling me I'm psychotic. He's like, no, I saw the same thing as you. So like now they're getting to the point where like they're going to go back to like the scene of the crime.
Okay. And
they're going to start doing a bunch of mysteries. I'm here for it. Her writing was amazing book one, but like, it's even better book two.
Oh, I love that.
I'm just so fucking here for it. Like I already have ideas of how I'm going to take pictures because I have woods behind my house and I'm going to pretend I'm being beamed up by a fucking UFO. Like it's so good.
I mean, you wish.
I wish.
I do have to read her first book still because I know you really loved it and it's been on my TBR. It's just like, I mean, there's just so many books on your TBR, and I'm such a mood reader that I'm like, I know that I would like it. I just need to, like, pick it up.
You also need to be in the mood for it, because if you're not in the mood to, like, read about cryptids, basically, and any kind of conspiracy theory. And I will say, the main characters, the female is always a little bit more strong-willed, and okay. The male, she tends to write as more of, like, I'm trying to find my way. Which, you know what? I kind of like it, because
I was going to say, I don't mind that.
Don't have it all together.
Yeah, I don't mind that at all.
Me either. So like if like you, I feel like you kind of have to be in the mood for that though, if you're used to and like reading more about like a dominant alpha male character.
I mean, you know that I'm not huge into the alphas all the time.
No, exactly. So I think you would like this.
Okay, good. What was I just going to say? Oh, so because you brought it up, the irresistible urge to fall for your enemy is the
published
version of the Draco Malfoy's Mortifying Ordeal. Yeah. I read two chapters. I soft DNF'd it. I just couldn't get into it right away.
Okay.
And then I never read Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal, but I know that it's like insanely popular. I saw some book talker, I guess, got the arc of this, who's like a huge Draco Hermione fanfic reader.
Right.
And she like was obsessed with Draco Malfoy and the Mortifying Ordeal of Falling in Love. And so she read this arc and she gave it 1 star. She was like, because I guess when you take out all of like the world building, because you can't, you know, because now it's not fanfic anymore, she can't use any Harry Potter like world building. And when you take all that out, apparently like the plot just like fell flat. Like, I guess like they didn't add enough in.
That's a shame, because like, yeah. I would say the Mortifying Ordeal is slow moving. It's a long book too, but it's just so good.
Yeah. So I mean, again, like I haven't. Yeah. She just said that like a lot of it didn't make sense, because you didn't have any of the background anymore that like made it make sense. Again, I don't know. I only read 2 chapters and I wasn't in the mood for it. So I was like, soft DNF. I'm just going to pick it up when I'm in the mood, which I've been doing a lot lately with books. Like, I started My Dark Vanessa, which is basically a story about a girl who was like groomed by her high school English teacher. And again, like I was like, oh, I might actually really like this, but I just like am not in the mood for that right now. So I'm not DNFing books. I'm soft DNFing books.
Yeah, sometimes you just want to, I mean, same with Heartstrings. Like, I'm not DNFing. I just put it down so I can like read a couple other things.
Yeah, there are just sometimes when like you're like, I would rather not force. That's the thing. I feel like sometimes it's not even that the book's bad, it's just that I'm not in the mood for the book, and so I don't have a good time reading it. But now I'm like more hesitant to go back to this The Irresistible Urge to Fall for Your Enemy, just because I saw that one review and a lot of people were commenting agreeing with it. And then I went and found her review on Goodreads, and then I saw people all, I mean, it only has like 445 reviews on Goodreads, and it's sitting, which like isn't a lot, but it is sitting at a 4.5 stars.
Okay.
But like Bailey, who we follow on TikTok, she rated it 3.5 stars, but didn't really give a review. I saw like some of the 5 stars were people just being like really excited for it to come out and not people who have read it yet. So I'm just curious. So I think I'm just going to wait, and then pick it up again and see like if I vibe, and if not, I just like won't review it. But, now I'm curious, because I kind of want you to read it even more, or at least like get it and like read a little bit of it to see if it like if it lives up to the expectations. But I feel like a lot of people who read the OG fanfic are not like happy with how this one turned out. I know, it's like a little upsetting. You and I both read now and finished Skythe and Sparrow.
Yes.
By Bryn Weaver, which is the third and final book in the Ruinous, whatever it's called, the Ruinous Love Trilogy, whatever, but Butcher and Blackbird, that series. I actually really liked Skythe and Sparrow, definitely more than Leather and Lark, but nothing will ever top Butcher and Blackbird.
Yeah.
So, like, I gave Skythe and Sparrow 4 stars. On its own, I really liked it. Compared to Butcher and Blackbird, it's not as good.
Yes, I agree.
And yeah, and I'm a slow burn Friends to Lovers fan, and they were definitely Friends to Lovers. I said it's slow-ish burn. It's like a warm burn.
Yes, I like,
it's not very slow. Like they're definitely fucking and stuff. But it's slower, I think, than the other two.
I agree. I also, it's not as like deathy.
It's not as deathy.
Like there's not a lot of,
there's like 2 murders, I think.
Yes. There's 2 murders. She's not a serial killer yet. She's like making her way. So is he, like, he's trying to run from his past, which basically, like, all of his brothers are obviously unalivers. And, like, he thinks that, like, oh, I shouldn't do this because I killed my dad. And, like, my brothers have had my back. So, like, it's, I honestly feel like it's a as crazy as to say, it's, like, a self-growth book, if you will. Like, they're finding themselves and, like, working together to, like, discover what they truly want. And that's why I also appreciate that they do separate at the end. Like, she thinks she needs to go back to the circus. He thinks he needs to kind of explore the side of him, figure some things out. I kind of would have, I would have almost liked, like, I liked the epilogues, but
the epilogue was so good.
But he also joins teams with, who's that guy, that bad guy?
Leander.
Yes. Like, he's not always easy to walk away from, as we know in book two. So I wish I had, like, a little bit more wrap up on all that.
I feel like, because based on the epilogue with, like, the new character that will be introduced for, like, her new series, I feel like Leander will continue to play a role.
That's kind of what my thought was too.
And I think we'll still see the guys, because they're, she's kind of connected to them based on, like, how one of the murders in Butcher and Blackbird. So I think we're going to see more of Leander. I feel like he's going to be, like, an overarching character for now, because I feel like we don't know enough about him, and, like, nothing's really come of it. Like, we know that Lachlan doesn't really want to be under his, like, thumb anymore. We know now Fionn is under his thumb and, like, kind of doesn't mind it, because he gets to, like, explore, like, that darker side of himself with, like, working with Leander. So, yeah. So I just feel like that's not the last that we're going to see of him.
I agree. I'm excited.
So I guess we'll see.
I mean, I will say it makes me feel good and positive that book three ended more on a high note for me. Heather and Lark, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like this, like, elevated it back up. Like, again, not to the level of Butcher and Blackbird, but
I just feel like nothing, like, Rowan Kane is, and Sloane, like, they, like, I really, really liked Rose, and I really liked Fionn too. But there's just something about Rowan and Sloane that I just feel like can't be topped.
The thing was, like, it weirdly worked there that they were both so strong in their own ways in that book, and then with, like, competition and, like, her being caught, basically, right? I don't know. There's, like, something of the way she set that up that I was like, I'm here for this.
Yeah. And just, like, Rowan's so hot. I really liked how, okay, so we meet Rose and Fionn and Butcher and Blackbird. I like that we got to, that Skyth and Sparrow kind of went back.
Yes.
So that we got to see, like, what happened. Because, like, we meet up with Rose and Fionn a few times in both of the first two books. Yeah. So I like that it kind of went back. We kind of got their whole story, and then it caught up and, like, kind of, like, went a little bit further. Because, yeah, the whole time, like, that, I mean, I even remember reading Skyth and Sparrow. I mean, not Skyth, Leather and Lark, when Rose goes to help Lachlan rescue Lark. And I just kind of remember being like, okay, like, what the fuck is Rose's deal?
Yeah, like, what's happening?
Is her leg still, like, I didn't even know, like, what the timeline was. I'm like, is her leg still broken? Okay,
like, what's happening here?
I'm like, no, it's been, like, over a year, actually, at this point. But, like, I had no idea. I'm like, where is she? Who is she? What is going on? I thought her character was, like, really fun and funny. Fionn's definitely more serious. Like, he's not brooding like Lachlan was. Just a serious he's guy. Just, like, a more serious guy. But he's, like, a sweetheart, but also has, like, a dark side. I just thought he was just, like, so cute and just very, like, younger brother vibes.
Yes.
And, like, Rowan is so middle brother. Like, they all fit the, like, the archetypes. Yeah.
I agree.
But yeah, the epilogue I thought was perfect, because in the first epilogue, it's Rowan and Sloane. So it kind of goes back to the beginning, and you get like, it's perfect. Like, Rowan dressed as a dragon with the paint. It's just so, like, typical them. And then they're at the cabin together, and Rose and Fionn, like, walk in, and they kind of, like, surprise everybody, because everyone thinks Fionn is still, like, missing, basically, or in, like, Croatia. It was just, yeah, it was really good. I think it was a good conclusion to the trilogy.
I have to agree with you on that. But I'm excited to see where she takes us with the next one.
Yeah, like, I will definitely pick up her next one. I did all three of these. I know you eyeball read. Katie and I switched places for this series, because she eyeball read all three, and I did the audio for all three.
Well, no, I did the audio for Leather and Lark. And okay. I wonder if that's maybe why I didn't like it as much.
Because of the weird giggling.
Yes.
The audio for Leather and Lark was done well, minus like the weird like giggles and like effects that they added in.
Yeah.
And I think that Bryn took that because there was like none of that in Scythe and Sparrow. Butcher and Blackbird, though, on audio, and I hate to recommend it because it's Joe Arden and he's like, not a good guy. It really is just done really well.
Always said Butcher and Black because that's the one I read by eyeball, and you're like, I'm shocked because like the audio is actually phenomenal.
I just think that any audio that's done in a duet is just,
it hits different.
Yeah, but Scythe and Sparrow duet really good. The I think it's Samantha Brentmore who like I just like love the I love her voice.
There's some people you gravitate towards. I've noticed with Audible. I'm like, oh, it's you.
Yeah. I just really let me just make sure that I'm correct. Yeah, Samantha Brentmore. I'm obsessed with her. She does a lot of she did. I didn't listen to it, but she did Kennedy in Play Along. I think she does like a lot of the Megan Quinn books. And then Eric Nolan did he did the audio for both Leather and Lark and Scythe and Sparrow. He just has a very good Irish accent that's not like too thick, and he just has like a very like nice sounding voice.
I hear you.
Anyway, other books that Katie and I both read that so if you haven't read Heartless Hunter and Rebel Witch and you want to without being spoiled, then just log off right now because we're going to, that's probably like going to be the rest of the podcast, if I'm being honest. And so good.
So good. This has been our TBRs for the longest time.
Yeah. I bought this last April. I actually had I found my receipt in the book when I started reading it. And it was like April 29th of 2024 was when I bought it. And it's just been sitting on my TBR cart since then.
I mean, sometimes when you're not in the mood, which I am glad I waited to do this when I was in the mood.
Yeah.
One thing, so this is the Crimson Moth series by Kristen Ciccarelli. I want to say Ciccarelli, but I've heard it on the audio. It's Ciccarelli. Mm-hmm. The covers are beautiful. So basically, Rune, our female main character, her life's forever changed because even though witches were once completely fine to have in the world, they were... I think they ruled at some point.
They did rule. They were the queen. Well, at least of this island, there was queens.
Yes.
Three witch queens.
And unfortunately, it comes a time where, like, this is all overturned. And if you do not turn in someone that you know is a witch, you're considered a witch sympathizer. And you could either be thrown in jail or purged, as they're calling them. So they catch wind these... What do they call themselves? I don't want to say the Republic, but
The New Republic, but
the New Republic.
Yeah, like, that's the witch like
catch wind that Rune's grandmother, who really isn't her grandmother, but she's taken her in, is a witch. So Rune and her grandmother have a discussion, and her grandma's like, "You have to turn me in, because if you don't turn me in, we're both gonna die. So I need you to live. Turn me in, whatever." So unfortunately, her grandmother is purged, and then Rune takes on this socialite, kind of bimbo, flirt, whole persona. But in reality, she is the Crimson Moth that these witch hunters have been hunting for years. And she slips in at the dead of night and saves these witches that they capture from being purged. So she's pretty badass in the back end.
Mm-hmm.
And they discover witches by stripping them of their clothing because they have silver marks on them. You need blood to cast any type of spell.
Yes.
Rune does not use these marks. She uses
her period blood.
But the thing about that is, obviously, it's old blood at times. It's not as strong or potent. You can't really practice because you only have so much. And again, if it goes bad, it's not... There's like this whole big thing of it. But she...
I would have been a great witch a year ago because I had an abundance of it at my disposal.
So I love her best friend, Alex. So Alex comes from a poor family, little angel baby. And she has another friend named Verity, who is a witch.
No, Verity's two sisters were witches, and they were Verity's parents. So this is, this is actually my one, there is one plot hole for me throughout this story. And it is that the witch queens were in charge, which is kind of like, we're just like out and about in society. A lot of witch families had, I think they were like considered, they were calling themselves like indentured servants. So basically like human slaves, but I think like not as, I don't know, but I think that Harrow was like indentured to this like witch family. Yeah. And there was like three kinds of spells you can do, like Menorah, Majora, and then Arcane. Arcane like kind of like is like against the rules because it like fucks with your soul and like basically like turns you evil, which I guess the witch queens were doing these kinds of spells. And anyway, so the one plot hole is like, how did the New Republic, after, you know, like this war against the witches that they started, which like needed to be done because those three sisters were fucking nuts. Mm-hmm. How did they not know who like the high society witches were? Like, how was Rune's grandmother like not already known to be a witch? Because they didn't have to hide being witches at that point.
And they used their market, like they did design to their market.
It was almost like, yeah, like they would have like tattoos almost. It wasn't tattoos. They would like carve like with a knife, like into their skin to be beautiful. Like
tattoos all over your body. Yeah, yes. Like they're supposed to be beautiful. So how do you not know? I'm with you. Like, how did
you? That was like the one thing that I was like, how did they not already know Rune's grandma, who owns a shipping company, is like very wealthy, very high society, throwing part. Like, I just like, how did they not know who the witches? I understand that them not knowing Rune was a witch right away because she didn't. She didn't know either. So you only find out if you're a witch basically on like the day that you get your first bleed. So the day you get your first period, if you start bleeding black, then you're a witch. And it only happens the first time. So yeah. Rune didn't know until after her grandmother had already been killed. But again, like, I just don't know how they didn't know that Rune's grandmother was a witch.
I agree.
That was like the one thing that I was like, I'm confused. I understand after they come in and like purge everybody, they don't know the second wave of witches. Okay. I'm like, how did they not know the first wave? Like, they should have known Rune's grandma was a witch from the beginning.
Yeah, I'm with you.
But that was my only, that I was like, oh, yeah.
But I really liked how this, like, both books throw you right into the plot. You yes. really don't get, you know, the different lands that they're traveling to, but there's not, like, that huge bulk and lift of a world building. There's no, like, true magic system. Like, you learn of those three ways that you can cast. There's ghosts, like, and, like, what, they don't show you what the markings are. They don't tell you what the markings are, obviously, because you just make cuts. Yeah. Draw blood, you do the spell symbol, you don't know what the spell symbol is for Ghost Walker, which is basically invisible. Like, I like how it's seamless.
Yeah, it was very easy to follow and understand. Yeah. Like, where I didn't have to, like, stop and be like, wait, what?
Yeah, and, like, once you do cast, there is a way to identify who is casting by, like, the witch symbol that appears overhead. So, like, in Rune's instance, she has to be very careful what she does cast because mm-hmm. the Crimson Moth is above her head. Yes. So if that's ever seen, then that's pretty much a dead ringer for who she is.
Yes.
I really liked this is hard to do because like they're both very stubborn and I did want to smack them both books, but mm-hmm. not where I want to like put the book down and walk away. But Kristen really writes a way where like Gideon thought he was protecting Alex by going after Rune. That's also what he stands for, since his whole family was basically murdered by these witches.
Yes.
So it's funny how he's doing one thing. Alex is helping Rune, one, because he loves her. Two, he already knows that she's a witch and sort of agrees with what she's doing. Like, he's like, on the flip side, why would we kill these witches when we didn't want them killing us? Like, we're only doing what we did, like what they did to us. And that's.
Yeah. It's like fighting evil with evil. Yeah. And I mean, at the end, they're like, okay, not all humans are bad and not all witches are bad. And like, we should work together to like build this, like whatever.
But I really like how it takes them a long time to like, and it's not even like they have like this big moment where they confess that they understand what the other is doing. It's just more of like, I think like you're saying, like they're starting to realize like, I'm just trying to help my people live. I understand we didn't do anything to help yours and vice versa. But like, there are good out there. And like in their minds, like, well, we're falling in love with each other. So like, there you go. Like, case in point. Like, I kind of like how, again, seamless. There's really no big confession of like what they're doing, what's going on.
No.
And I love how they're literally playing each other from both sides, but also falling for each other. Like, yes. It's so fun to me that like, that's what happens. Like in the end, like she gets away and he's like, I gotta go after her and kill her. Like, it's just like this hunt always. Like, it's, I really feel like it's cat and mouse.
It, okay, so I was saying this is like a very true enemies to lovers story. Yes. They are, again, like, Rune is a witch. Nobody knows. Gideon is a witch hunter. He suspects, he works at the spy Harrow. Harrow suspects that Rune either is or knows who the Crimson Moth is, because they realize that the witches who are being escaping from jail are getting off the island in Rune's company's shipping containers. So yeah, they're like, she either knows who it is or she is a Crimson Moth, whatever. So like basically like Gideon starts kind of trying to date her so that he can like see if she has any markings. She's trying to get close to him because there is a witch in custody that she wants to break out. She's always had a crush on Gideon though, but Gideon's kind of like had a thing for her the first time he met her, but he knows that his brother is like in love with her. So he's kind of always been like a dick to her.
That, and like one thing that I do want to talk about is the saddest things. The book two gives me some vibes of something else we'll talk about in a second, but Gideon doesn't come from money.
No.
She does.
And he brings it up a lot that he doesn't think that, one, that she would be into him because of the like difference in status. Two, that he doesn't think he's good enough for her. So this is the thing that I struggled with Gideon, because I really, really liked his character a lot. And I actually, that's the thing too, like, he's not a good person. Nobody in this book, besides I think Alex, is a good person. They're all very morally gray. They've all like done really horrible things, but they've also been given kind of no other choice.
Yeah.
So Gideon's mother and father are fashion designers, and they are discovered by the Queen Witches, and they are basically, Gideon, his mother, his father, and his younger sister are brought to live in the palace to be like the like fashion designers for the queens. And his brother Alex is on like the mainland. He's like very proficient in the piano, and he's like a composer, so he's like away at like composer music school, whatever. And Gideon like takes like one look at the youngest witch queen, and he's like a typical teenage boy, like,
damn.
He's like, okay, like, damn. And she takes an immediately liking to Gideon, and at first it's like cute young love romance, whatever, and then it starts turning like very evil and sinister, and she emotionally, physically, mentally, like, she abuses him to the point where she literally kills his sister.
Yeah.
And it's not explicitly like on page that Gideon is raped, but he is. He is sexually abused by her for years. And once the sister dies, the mom then kills her. I think the mom kills herself over it. And then the dad eventually dies as well.
Yeah.
And it's all because of the witch queens, essentially, because they were so abusive and everything towards the family and towards Gideon. And Cressida like cannot let it go.
No.
And I mean, I was obviously very upset with Al. I knew, I was like, Alex didn't kill her. Only he couldn't do it. He's too good of a boy.
I knew it until once he confessed. I was like, that motherfucker. But
I know.
But Alex is very lover, not a fighter. And he does say explicitly, like, it would, you know what? You can't even get mad at him, because at the end of the day, like, you are taking a life, right? So, like, in your heart of hearts, even though, like, she killed his, like, he couldn't do it. And, like, that's okay. That's who Alex was. Like, and he does say, like, I'm solving evil with evil. Like, I can't do it.
I was gonna say, Alex very much, like, believed, like, that, like, people deserve second chances, that not all witches are evil. Like, I don't, Alex wasn't there either. Like, Alex knew what was going on.
Exactly.
Yeah. Like, Alex, like, Alex didn't even know what was going on. He just saw, like, his brother, like, he comes back, and his brother is, like, drinking and, like, doing drugs and getting into fights. Like, he doesn't really understand it. He, like, finds out, but he wasn't there. He didn't see everything that was going on.
If he was there, maybe Cressida would have been.
I think Alex just saw the best in people and, like, just was like, if I let her go, she will leave. She won't come back. She'd be crazy to come back.
He really believed that she would go away.
Yeah. And I think he just, like, wanted the humans and witches to, like, build a better relationship, build a better future, like, while, like, you know, get the queens out. And, like, it just, like, that was, he's very idealistic.
Yes.
And unfortunately, like, it ends up with him getting killed, which is, like, so upsetting.
he basically takes a bullet for his brother. Angel BB, I thought for sure, I was like, oh, he's coming back. And then I was like, he's dead. he's gone.
So Gideon, so now Gideon's whole family killed by Cressida, basically. Yep. And so, then I'm sorry, go on.
You're fine. You can keep going.
No, I'm sorry. And then I'm like, and then the next book starts. I'm like, right, whatever.
Off, basically.
And she's, and Cressida, yeah, but, and Cressida's like trying to basically like turn him into like her like puppet again. Like her, like she wants to assault it. Like it's
Verity, who's Rune's best friend, is Cressida.
Yes.
So, like when Rune goes to visit her at her school and is like, I'm at her room.
It's a broom closet.
Like she's asking the, like basically the RA, if you will, like, where's Verity? And she's like, yeah, I got the wrong building. And she's like, no, I'm in the right building. She's like, there's no Verity here. And she's like, what the fuck?
Yeah.
But I feel, again, like Rock in a hard place for, and I really like how this is written out, right? Like, because again, Rune's like, I know this bitch is psycho, but she's the only chance we have to free the witches, to stop these hunts, like stop these purges. I know she's psycho, but there's nothing else we can do. So like, it's the lesser of two evils, right? Like,
that's like the theme of the whole book.
The whole
from
book.
Both sides.
Yes.
Lesser of two evils. Yep. And like, you want to do everything you can to protect yourself and your people and your community.
Yep.
Even if you don't agree with leadership at the time. And Rune does not like Cressida. Mm-hmm. She kind of wishes Cressida would probably just like die.
Yeah.
Which like, as the story goes on, like more and more Rune like hates her. But yeah. Rune's like, if I want to go home, I can't go home or they'll kill me.
Yeah.
The only way I can go home is if she's in power. And it's like,
yeah,
it's like one group wants to kill me. One group is evil, but doesn't want to kill me. I guess I'm going to go with the one where I live.
And like this poor girl has to like basically agree to marry some guy. Like she's basically pushing off his advances. She doesn't want to do anything with him. Gideon's there to kill her. And it's so funny because then they're in a situation where like, they both are like, I'm going to kill you. And they're both like, wait, I'm going to let you go because you're about to die by somebody else's hands and vice versa. Like,
yeah.
But I do like how they're forced to work together immediately.
Yeah.
Like she saves Gideon. Cressida is no dope. She figures it out immediately. Basically threatens Rune. Just like Rune saves face in front of everyone else.
Yeah.
Cressida's like, I fucking know it's you. So like, I'm cut. Like Gideon's mine. Like, don't get in my way. So again, Rune's like, if I stay, I'm going to die eventually. So like now here I am yet again on a run.
Yeah.
One thing that this book gives vibes of, Titanic at times, because when Rose goes down to be with the third level, so like your lower class individuals, Gideon's always so nervous that she won't know how to interact and fit in. And like, don't get me wrong, she doesn't know how to shoot a gun. Like she wasn't really good at that game. But she could still save face and hang in there, right?
Yeah.
Like, he's still... So I feel like there was, like, that moment on the boat when they were together that I was like, this is giving me Titanic vibes.
Rune's cool. I think Rune's cool.
Yeah. Like, she...
I don't know.
She's a socially, but she also put on a persona. She also knows how to blend in disguise, obviously. And, like, she likes people. Like, she's just... She, in her own morally gray way, she's just there to help others live.
Yeah.
So I will say I kind of had suspicions for a while. This is the one thing of the whole book that I was able to guess was that Rune was the missing sister.
Yeah.
That's the only thing I was able to project.
As soon as Cressida said to him that, oh, there's a missing sister.
I was like, it's Rune.
I was like, it's Rune. Yeah. Because in the beginning we're like, we don't really know who her parents are. And she just like was like given to Kestrel, her grandma. Like it was like this whole thing. I was like, it's Rune.
The fucking seeing witch, though, with her little, her poor little daughter, Meadow, and they had, like, her hand with the knife. I was on a run, and I was like, don't cry. They're not going to kill a child. It's okay. Don't cry.
I mean, I wouldn't have been surprised, I feel like.
I wouldn't have been surprised, but I was, like, in my mind of minds, I was like, I don't think she's going to do this, but, like, if she does, I'm going to have to go home for a little.
Yeah. I love, like, the back and forth, like, how you just said, too. I'm going to kill you. No, I'm going to kill you. And then it's like, no, I'm not going to kill you. Like, actually, let's work together. But no, I hate you. But no, I love you. But no, I hate him. But no, I love him.
And you know what I like too? I like that as time goes on in that story, especially book two, I don't know if you realize this, but we popped to book two now.
We're kind of all over the place all the time.
Gideon is a captain, right? Like, he leads his troop, and he's well-respected amongst his comrades, if you will. You start to see them even falter when he does get captured, right? Like, he plays both sides. Hey, I'm going to help Room, but I'm also going to, like, help myself by telling them my plan, which is, like, you got to let me follow her so I can capture her. And Room overhears his plan, calls him out on it, and he's like, what would you have me do? Like,
yeah.
Like, again, rock and hard place. Do I want to die by the people that I've been trying to fight for, or do I just want to jump into bed? Like, he's having a hard time with it.
Yeah, I was getting so frustrated with him because I'm like, you are in love with her. You already handed her over one time. Like, she was like seconds away from being killed because he turned her in and his brother.
Yes.
Which, like, I was very annoyed with Gideon at the end because I was like, now you're acting like Rune got your brother killed. You got your brother killed.
You got your brother killed. You motherfucker.
Yeah. Alex stepping in front of the bullet was his own. But you were about to let your brother have his throat slit on stage because he was supporting witches. Okay, fine, whatever. Like, again, I understand your trauma and, like, whatever. But then he's, like, constantly, like, I'm still going to turn her in. And then he's, like, gets mad at her when she's, like, kind of like not trusting of him. And I'm like, what do you expect? They're so funny because, like, they're both the same thing. And both of their internal monologues are like, they're in love. Yes. But they're also, like, really struggling with their own moral code. Because it's like this person.
Makes sense,
yeah,
right?
No, it does.
So strong-willed against their fights and passions and what they're driving towards. And, like, to now fall in love with someone who represents everything that you hate. Like, it should be a battle. And, like, I love that you even see that in his soldiers, right? Like, the kid that he trains looks uncomfortable. He's in the shackles, walking around with them. And, like, eventually the kid slips him the keys into his hands. To let go. Like, they all battle out. And, like, who's the other girl?
Layla,
who's, like, freaking out. She's like, my brother's telling me to kill you. You're Gideon. Like, how do I do that? Because she's like, I'll give you 15 seconds head start. Like, anything they all can, like, it's just so interesting to see, but, like, it makes the most sense to me.
Yeah. And I like with Rune and Gideon too, like, okay, when she's escaping with, I forget their names, but the witch and her daughter Meadow, Gideon is like, okay, I'm going to give you, like, a head start, but then he completely, like, diverts the attention away from where Rune is going to be. She realizes this a little bit too late. Because the witch that's also on the ship doesn't give her, like, the kind of like the engagement ring that Gideon makes her as, like, a I love you, I'm letting you escape type thing. And it all works out because then Rune basically sacrifices, like, herself to break the curse that Cressida put on him. And then Rune is able to escape Cressida's clutches, and she goes and she finds him and she rescues him this time. They're constantly going back and forth and rescuing each other from these, like, dire situations that they kind of each are getting themselves into. You and I both said this, and I texted you to see where you were in the book at this time when I was reading it. Okay, so Rune gets her lashings. She breaks the curse on Gideon. She knows that she is his one true love because that's the whole curse. Mm-hmm. Like, you just can't be with, like, your one true love, whatever. So she's like, okay, I know that this man, I am the love of his life.
Yes.
And I love him. And he helped me escape. So she, like, she goes and she finds him. She helps him escape. They find this cottage where, like, two of their, well, like, the one kid that is in, like, the same social circles as Rune is, who's, like, kind of like a sympathizer to, like, the witches and the cause. He's also somebody who's very good at playing dumb and playing stupid so that people won't look at him. And I'm like, okay, like, now these two are together. Now they're on the same side. They're working together. And then
Gideon's the one who's even like, we should vote. Like, there's been two sides. Let's make a third. Like, let's forge our own path to, like, bring peace.
And all throughout the first book, Alex is like, let's leave. Let's escape. Like, you're never going to be safe. And then Rune and Gideon go through all this bullshit. They overcome all this stuff. They are finally, like, in love, and, like, they know that they love each other. And Gideon's like, let's forge this new path. And she's like, I think I need to leave.
Yeah.
And then she's like, come with me. And he's like, I can't
abandon,
like, this cause that we've started.
Yeah.
And she's like, well, I can't stay here.
And watch you die.
And so she leaves. And then she sees that, like, he's being held at gunpoint. So she jumps off the train and saves him. And then finally she's like, okay, I guess we really should just do this together.
Yeah.
I loved the end. Like, I loved that he had to kill her.
Yes.
Spoiler alert, she comes back to life. But I love that she was like, it's going to happen. It needs to be, like, you need to do it. You need to stop this. Like, and I love that he had the strength to do it instead of letting her be captured and, like, tortured. Like, because his whole thing was, if Cressida ever gets me, I want somebody to kill me.
Yes.
Like, he's like, I would rather. Yeah. So he knows, like, if he doesn't kill Rune, it's like, it's
the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, it's inhumane. Like,
yeah.
And, like, the whole conversation that they have right before he pulls the trigger and, like, everything is just, like, and then I love that as soon as, I forgot his name, but her friend who, like, plays dumb, who's, like, his lover.
Yeah. Antonio?
Antonio is, like, he's like an acolyte for one of, like, whatever, for there's, like, these, like, ancients is, I think, what they're called. And the ancients wanted, like, they started the witch. It's like a whole thing. And when he's telling the story, I was like, oh my God, Serafina is an ancient. I'm like, she's wisdom.
Yes.
I was like, oh my God, she's wisdom. Like, and it all came around.
She was something important. Yeah. And same with Antonio. When I met him, I was like, there's something about him. Like, there's something we don't know yet with him.
Yeah. And I like too, like, every Gideon. And Antonio comes in at the end, whatever, but, like, this is, like, so silly. All of the men in the book, besides Gideon, are, like, pretty shitty. And, like, Gideon has his moments. But, like, it is, like, a very... Even Cressida, who fucking sucks. Every character in this book is, like, a very strong female character. Mm-hmm. Harrow, the spy, who, like, hate her, but, like, understand her motives, too. Layla, who is another witch hunter, like, goes against her brother, like... They're all, like, these, like, very strong female characters, and they all are very complex in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. They're so good.
And, like, just, like...
You know what I like that she did, too? I mean, I don't think she needed to do this, but I think it gives you hope after everything. Because, again, you're right. You don't know... Like, same thing with the child. Like, you didn't know what was going to happen with Meadow. Like, you don't know what's going to happen with Rune. So I feel like because this whole duology, if you will, was so lesser of two evils, right? Mm-hmm. You couldn't really figure out, like, if someone was going to die. Like, was there a happy ending? Like, what was going to come of it? So I do like that in the midst of chaos, Rune ends up having a vision of Gideon and three children.
Yeah.
And you do kind of, like, obviously in your heart of hearts, you're hoping it's her that had the children with him. And you do come to find out. Like, I feel like that was, like, a nice little glimmer of, like, hope that sparks through you as a reader. To kind of carry you through to be like, this should probably hopefully be a happy ending, but, like, let's make sure.
Yes, so because I have PTSD from when I read the Divergent series before it was movies. Like, I read it as it came out and I got to the last book, blah, 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 whatever. And then when Triss sacrifices herself and dies at the end. And then eventually years later, I think for Christina, like at the end, it's like, they're kind of like, oh, we love Triss so much. Like, we should be together. It's like very strange. I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't think that Christina was going to kill Rune.
No, me either.
And I thought that she would come back because of the whole, like, sister thing and the spell and, like, whatever. So I was like, okay, I don't think she's dead. But then there was that part of me that was like, I have PTSD from Divergent. And, like, if she dies and, like...
After all of this.
And he ends up with, like, Layla or somebody, like, somebody who, like, helps. I was like, I will... freak out. I didn't think so. I was like, it's a less than 1% chance, but there's still, like, that part of me that's like, I've seen it happen before and I didn't like it.
Yeah, literally.
Yeah,
you just never know. But yeah, it was a really good, I mean, I hope you read it, if we didn't, since we spoil everything for you basically.
Or if you're like Katie and you like a spoiler and now you know going in what to expect. It's just her, like, her writing is, like, so beautiful, very atmospheric, very, like, it would be a perfect read for the fall, but it's also, like, I wouldn't put it off. It is really good. It's a completed duology.
It would be a good TV show, too.
Yes. And it's not at all, like One Dark Window, but it has the same vibe. So if you liked One Dark Window, this is YA, but it doesn't read YA. There's not...
Mature.
Yeah, like, there's not explicit sex scenes, but there are, like... There's, you know, things are happening. It's giving, like, it's giving the doors cracked open, not completely closed. There are definitely dark themes of, like, murder and rape and honestly like genocide of the like the witches are yeah. It's genocide, like there are very dark themes, so triggers obviously, but I think it was just it's a very mature story. It's written really 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 well, and I think it's just a it's also a very quick easy read. Like they're 350 pages each, or around like 400 pages each, so 800 pages in total for both of them. Which is yeah, like I think I read Rebel Witch in 24 hours.
It was easy to blow through.
Yeah, I couldn't stop. Like I kept being like, okay, next chapter, I'm gonna put it down, and then I would like read it, and I'd be like, I have to keep going.
I need to keep going because I need to know what's happening.
Yeah,
you know, it was really good.
It was really good. So hopefully we've convinced you to read it, or hopefully if you have read it, you agree with us on everything that we've said, and if you don't, I don't want to hear it. No, I'm kidding. I've only heard people say good things about it, so I feel like we are in good company with that. Next week we are interviewing Morgan Elizabeth and her newest book, which is coming out. I believe it comes out while you're listening. It'll be out. I think it comes out on Tuesday the 4th. Guys, bear with me.
Everything comes out on the 4th.
I was like, there's a lot of releases. I think it comes out that week. We will be interviewing her on the 11th. That episode will come out on the 12th. Then the rest of the month, we will be reviewing Wild Side by Elsie Silver and Promise Me Sunshine by Cara Bastone. And if you're listening to this right now, I am on the beach and I'm getting a tan and I'm not working and I'm enjoying myself and you guys are not. And if you are also doing the same thing as me, I don't want to hear it. I'm the only person who's allowed to go on vacation. I definitely know that Katie is not going to be on vacation next week, and I will be. So I will be sending you pictures of the beach and my like little cocktails and whatever else while you're miserable in New Jersey.
Thanks, girlfriend.
I got you. I got your back, girl.
I know you do. So kind.
Truly the kindest.
The kindest.
All right. I have nothing else after that. So, Katie Jean, if you can please send us out.
Thank you so much for listening to our episode. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to subscribe to receive notifications anytime a new episode drops.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at thebff.bookclub. If you have any comments, questions, book recommendations, or books you want us to talk about in future episodes, please send us an email at thebff.bookclub1@gmail.com.
We appreciate your support.
See you, fuckers.